This is the BBC.
This podcast is supported by advertising outside the UK.
Across Northern Ireland, on your radio and on BBC Sounds. This is
the Stephen Nolan Show!
Hello everyone, Belfast City Council want a public consultation on their draft proposals around language and their proposal to make the corporate logo bilingual, Irish and English, in Northern Ireland, and uniforms and directional signs and all. Anyway, we'll explain it all on the programme today. It went boogaloo on the phones. Boogaloo, boogaloo, boogaloo. Bye-bye. Have a listen.
The Stephen Nolan Show!
Good morning. Belfast City Council has a list of proposals and it's for public consultation. And sometimes when you hear about that in the news, it goes over your head. Public consultation is about you, as a citizen of this country, telling the people in authority what you think and whether you want something to happen or not. And there will be many people who think that in a progressive society, that what Belfast City Council is proposing to do needs to happen. And if you're one of them, pick up the phone this morning. There will be others who think that this should not happen. So what are we talking about? Well, here are some of the proposals that Belfast City Council intends to do. These are draft proposals, but this is what they are setting out. So the council would adopt a bilingual, so that's Irish and English, corporate identity. And that would be the standard corporate logo across all corporate branding. So you would have Irish and English on headed paper, banners, street bins, uniforms, bin lorries, other council vehicles. And that is just some of what would happen. We'll go through with more of it in a moment or two. Carl White from the SDLP is with us this morning. Morning, Carl.
Morning, Stephen.
Good morning. And Ron McDowell from the TUV. Good morning, Ron.
Good morning, Carl. Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning, good morning. Well, Ron, what is wrong in a society where we know some people embrace English, some embrace Irish, for everything to be bilingual?
You really haven't done this consultation justice. This is an eye-watering document. Anybody that hasn't been following this story, they'll know, obviously, that quite often we have a little debate on here about Irish language. This goes far beyond Irish language. This goes far beyond a corporate logo. It goes down to the very DNA about the streets of Belfast, where Irish language, what you said, would be equal. I think the original consultation that I seen said that Irish language would have the preeminence, and it has the preeminence everywhere in communications with Belfast City Council, with the corporate logo, and even...
No, I don't see that. It talks about bilingual. Yeah. It doesn't talk about preeminence.
That's right. And the original consultation that I seen as a councillor within Belfast City Council has preeminence there, where Irish language has the preeminence. So basically what Belfast City Council have done is they've went to Fors na Gaeilge as their main consultation in this document and said, what do you want? And this is an Irish language wish list. And it reaches deep in the society in Belfast. It's very, very divisive. It's going to destroy good relations within the city. And I have grave, grave concerns about this.
How is it going to destroy good relations, Ron? How?
So you've mentioned the corporate logo. I've already been approached by guys who work for the council who have came to me. This corporate logo that's going to be on their shirts, that's going to be on their businesses, that it's going to be on all council facilities from Belfast Zoo to Belfast Castle. It's going to be on community gardens, mugger pitches, playgrounds, walks, toilets. If you see a sign that says left on a council facility, it's going to have left in Irish language underneath it as well. And that's just the corporate logo. There are people who, in the city, who don't identify as Irish. They don't have an Irish
identity. English will be on the logo as well.
That's right.
For those people that don't identify. So why don't we all live together, sharing each other's preferences?
Because English isn't the cultural identity of the Ulster British people here either. Belfast City Council has taken a policy where they have said...
This is a draft proposal. It's up to the council, it's up to the public to feed into the council as to whether they want this to happen or not.
Yes, and I have absolutely no confidence whatsoever that Belfast City Council are going to be objective when this comes back. I'm convinced that it doesn't matter how people return the consultation, Belfast City Council has set their stall out. They're moved within, and this document was moved by Sinn Féin and Alliance on Belfast City Council. And Belfast City Council basically do whatever they're told on this. But it goes beyond that. Where I would have grave concerns as well is in the document, the consultation, they say things like there has to be an audit of Irish language skills of existing staff. Well, what does that mean? They also said that there should be cultural awareness training for people who maybe aren't on board with this Irish language legislation. Well, what does that mean? I mean, there's real grave concerns here that anybody that raises a counter opinion or would have concerns about this are going to be squashed by Belfast City Council. You can argue about the cost of this because this goes into areas like the Shankill Road where I represent. It would be the Shankill Road Leisure Centre. It would be the Shankill Road Recycling Centre. Shankill Graveyard would all have dual language signage. What's the cost going to be for the new corporate logo? And what's the cost going to be for the eventual vandalism when it will come because of this policy?
Carl White?
Stephen, I don't know where to begin with that. Ron is either deliberately telling untruths about the policy or he just hasn't read it. And it's very unfortunate that this opportunity to see the Irish language is something that brings people in Belfast together, because that is what it's doing, whether Ron McDowell and the TUV like it or not. People from all backgrounds, religions and none, are learning and appreciating the value of the Irish language and understanding its relevance and importance to our city. The idea that it would take preeminence, is ludicrous. I don't know which particular part of it is eye-watering, because Ron McDowell is a Belfast City Councillor, so he isn't fully involved and has full sight over all these proposals. And that's the stage they're at, Stephen. They're just proposals. There's a lot of good ideas in there. There's some ideas. You know, I'm an SDLP councillor, Irish language supporter, learner,
well,
speaker, and there's things I don't like about it. So the purpose of the consultation is for people to make their views known, and not to listen to people like Ron McDowell who come on the radio and try to suggest that this is something to be scared of.
You're disputing, Carl, Ron McDowell saying that Irish language would be given a priority or would be preeminent.
Mm-hmm.
It's our understanding that Belfast City Council, when they sent out the public consultation yesterday, sent it out with Irish on top and then English below it. So if the majority language in Northern Ireland is English, what type of message were Belfast City Council sending out to the public when they put the minority language first when they were issuing the public consultation? What does that feel like to you?
Well, I don't know. I haven't seen what they're
do.
Referring to.
We do.
Okay.
They sent out the public consultation with Irish on top.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm sitting in the City Hall now, Stephen. I'm at my desk at the council. I've been at my desk for the last, I've been elected in 2019. I assure you, the English language is the preeminent language in this organisation.
Well, Belfast City Council yesterday, everybody can search their tweet. We will put their tweet out right now. We will publish it, and it's got Irish language at the top.
Okay, but the alphabetical order of where a language appears in a single communication that you were issued yesterday does not suggest or define that the Irish language is preeminent.
This is not us being issued it. This is the whole public of Northern Ireland by Belfast City Council.
Okay.
They put on a Twitter feed, Irish first.
I'm reading the consultation document in English.
I'll put it out now so that everybody can see it.
Okay.
They can make up their own mind.
That doesn't support any claim that Irish is going to become a preeminent. There's a proposal for bilingualism in the City Council. That's the proposal that's in front of it.
But in any messaging from Belfast City Council, will they continue as they have from yesterday, and will it be Irish first on all their communication?
I don't know. I'm not in charge of the communications operation at City Council and whether Irish language or English language comes first in tweets. You know, if that's the level that we're at in this discussion, I'd hope for a substantive look at the issues, not about which language goes first.
Ron, does it matter to you?
It certainly matters to me. And what matters to me is Belfast City Council took on an obligation, I think it was in 2008, that they would promote and have a policy for the promotion of Ulster Scots, Ulster British identity and Irish language. There is no room in the city for an Ulster Scots, Ulster British policy to exist side by side with this.
That's absolutely false.
All consuming. And what I would say is, they quote quite extensively in this the United European Charter on Minority Languages. So one of the things that the European Charter on Minority Languages says is that parties shall refrain from policies or practices aimed at assimilation. There is a significant swathe of the city doesn't identify itself as Irish. They see themselves as having an Ulster British identity, but there's no room for that now within this Belfast City Council consultation document. There's no room for them to exist. You're going to go to these people in the Shankill Road, orange men similar to myself, and give them an Irish corporate logo that they must wear. If they object to it, they're going to have an...
Does the word Shankill not come from Irish? Does the word Shankill not come from Irish? It means old church in Irish, doesn't it?
I am not against the Irish language. But this is ridiculous. Carl?
What Ron is saying is false. There are proposals regarding branding of uniforms. There are proposals regarding branding of different facilities across the city at different stages at different times. You know, it's absolutely ludicrous to suggest that anyone in working for Belfast City Council is going to be forced to wear some sort of logo or brand.
It does not say that it will be voluntary.
No, but Stephen, it's a consultation. You know, I keep saying
and in the consultation, it does not say that Belfast City Council proposes that people will have the choice whether to wear.
But I'm saying you've asked me as an SDLP representative. So our position in responding to the consultation, which I hope Ron does and others do, would be that in that specific issue which you've raised, of course that shouldn't be mandatory. That goes without saying. But we need to focus on what the wider proposals are. Ron keeps talking about the Ulster British identity. It's embedded in the British identity in Wales and in Scotland to have bilingual language.
Can I just tell you why I've said what I've said? So I've read these draft proposals from the council, and Section 15 says the following: Belfast City Council will adopt a new bilingual Irish-English corporate identity, and the bilingual logo will become the new proactive, here's the key term, Carl, de facto council logo to be used comprehensively across all corporate branding.
Mm-hmm.
There's no discretion in that.
Well, I have that paragraph in front of me here.
The English-only version of the logo will be available upon request.
Yeah.
Carl, if we... Look, can we make this streetwise? Right,
I'm trying to.
Right, well, let me ask this then. So you've got a group of men or women, and they're out in a bin lorry, and they're going up the Shankill. How's it going to play out? If some have the corporate logo bilingual and some don't, how will that go down in the Shankill?
Well, that's up to people in the Shankill. I actually don't think that'll be a problem. Spoken to people in the Shankill I don't know why Councillor McDowell thinks it's appropriate to laugh his head off at that. You know, I've spoken to people in the Shankill. I don't represent that area. I don't think they're going to go out and start hassling people because they have a bit of Irish written on their council uniform. But, Stephen, as you pointed out, it does say the English-only version of the logo will be available on request. There's absolutely no circumstances where I or my party would support any scenario where workers in this city were made to wear a uniform with some sort of emblem or logo on it with some that they weren't comfortable with. That's just not going to happen. We will be making our view clear in the consultation. So Ron, instead of coming on the radio and trying to, you know, wind everybody up, should actually respond to the consultation as well and make the points that he's trying to make here to the council,
Ron,
which he's a member of, by the way, to make sure that the points that he's making are made through the process instead of coming on the radio and laughing.
Well, Ron, you can pick this up now. But Ron, in the spirit of inclusivity and equality, when Belfast City Council are proposing here an English-only version of the logo being available upon request, surely if this is all about equality, they should be making available upon request an Irish-only version of the logo, which they don't do. Why are they not doing that?
We've also had services offered in Irish before in Belfast City Council, and the uptake on them has been woeful. There was the Irish language email facility and also the phone-in, and they weren't used. But to turn around and say that Carr's being disingenuous when he says he can't see an issue with Irish language on the Shankill. We had one example of a leisure centre, the Olympia Leisure Centre, which is only one. It's the tip of the iceberg, therefore, where they proposed dual language signage at the Olympia Leisure Centre. And I went to a public consultation in the leisure centre, and the people from the village were ready to eat me alive, never mind anybody else. So this is potentially dynamite for the city. Carl is saying that he would step back from some of these issues. I want to have that conversation. It should never have got this far. This is an oppressive document. There's bits of it that Carl is saying there now. It has went too far. I agree with
that. No, I didn't say that. No, sorry, I didn't say that. What I said was there's a consultation document out there with proposals and ideas, and it's people's responsibility to answer those. And I was very clear from the beginning, there's aspects of this policy that I don't like. I'm an Irish language supporter, an Irish language speaker, a learner. There's bits of it I don't like either, and I'll be making that clear. But what I'm not doing is coming on the radio to wind people up and say things. You use terms like eye-watering, say that Irish language would be preeminent in the City Hall. I'm sitting in the City Hall. I assure you, I would have to wander, go round and walk for quite a while before I find a single word written in Irish. So it's just not true. And what I'm not.
You say you don't like some parts of this, Carl. Which parts don't you like?
Well, sorry, I just want to finish this point. I'm not being disingenuous about the Shankill either, because I know people in Belfast, and they're not going to start hassling men and women working on bin lorries because of a logo that they have or don't have on their clothes. I just know people in Belfast. That's not who we are. There's things I don't like about it, Stephen. There's aspects of it around where signage goes. You know, for example, there's a focus now on signage outside where Irish language classes are. Yeah, there's no focus on schools where Irish is taught. And for a long time, you know, I come from a family of Irish speakers, and the only place where Irish was taught was in schools, in secondary schools and grammar schools in Belfast. And yet, there's no focus on signage in those areas. I think that's something that we missed out on, because there's communities there that do speak Irish and have been learning Irish.
So you want to go even further?
It's not even further, because on the other hand, there's areas where I think, is there really, you know, is there a need for that immediately? Where this area, these areas, where I think there is a demand.
Can I move to section 21? Belfast City Council want to, they say they will, this is all draft, obviously, provide staff with a code of courtesy for Indigenous languages and provision of cultural awareness training. So to be a member of staff at the council, and they say will provide staff, they don't say provide staff the opportunity, they say they'll be given cultural awareness training. So will all members of staff at Belfast City Council be forced to take awareness training about the Irish language?
No, and we have other languages.
Doesn't say that.
Well, the other languages, it does say that it's for Indigenous languages, so that includes Ulster Scots as well. And there is an awareness job there, Stephen. I spent 4 years in the Flags Commission, and I was completely, I was ignorant of Ulster Scots language, that community, until I started doing that work. And during that period, I learned a lot about it. So nothing's mandatory, but I'm glad I went through that process.
So Ron, why don't give people the opportunity to learn? And is it really that offensive?
I'm quite happy for people to
have the
opportunity.
Why is it offensive at all? Why not embrace it?
To learn, I've said this before, there is Irish language representation in Belfast Orange Hall, of where I'm a trustee. I'm quite happy for the heritage of the Irish language to be preserved, but this goes beyond that. This is an oppressive document. I said it from the European Charter on Minority Language. It's something which aimed at assimilation. For me and the community that I represent, we have our own identity. We have our own heritage. We have our own linguistic heritage, and we don't want an Irish language one forced upon us, and that's what this consultation does. But it goes beyond even the things that we've spoken about there. I mean, the cost of this, the cost of designing a brand new corporate logo can be eye-watering. Carter's called me out for saying eye-watering. The cost of designing a new corporate logo can be eye-watering. To roll that out on every council facility can be eye-watering. To put it on every sign that the council owns, whether it says left or whether it says right, can be eye-watering. The impact upon employment in the Belfast City Council, I'd be really, really concerned about that as well. And the cost of communication, every letter that you send comes back to you in dual language. Every form that they have is made available in dual language.
Well, we have asked.
New employment for that?
Well, one of the questions I have for Belfast City Council is how can they expect the public to fully consult about this if they won't give the public a guide to how much it would cost? So people in Northern Ireland are looking at their government telling them that there's a finite resource, that money is stretched. And does Belfast City Council not think that it would affect people's decision-making? Even those who support bilingual signage, they may form their opinion based on many different matters, including but not limited to how much is this going to cost. So when we went to Belfast City Council and said, how much will this draft policy cost? They said, we do not have the figures on how much it will cost to implement. Now, how is that rational? How can they propose something without telling people how much it would cost? Point two, if this is agreed before people know the costing, what if Belfast City Council can't afford to pay for it? What other services are they going to have to cut in order to implement what is agreed? The costing, they said, will be determined by how elected members decide to take the policy forward. Once the consultation closes, all feedback will be brought before elected members for further consideration. It'll be for elected members to agree the final Irish language policy without being told how much it will cost.
You're right to highlight that, Stephen, and I think it has been disappointing during this process that we aren't seeing costs of different possibilities that could be implemented. The difference between the council and Stormont, of course, is that there are 60 Belfast councillors who are accountable directly to the ratepayers, and there's a process once the recommendations are made from the consultation. Costs will have to be sourced, and then it will be a decision on a case-by-case basis, I would imagine, about whether this is affordable and how it's going to be paid for. So you're right to raise that point.
But if they're consulting with the public, if they are genuinely consulting with the public, why have they not broken down each proposal with a draft costing beside it? Why have they not done that? How on earth can the public engage in a proper consultation if they don't know if this is going to cost thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions? Why are they keeping the public blind about that, Carl? And you're in that council.
I am in the council, and I've raised this issue regarding costs and proposed costs, and I've got the same answer that you've been given, which is once we agree what the policy is, the cost will be looked at and that will be brought back to the council. Now, I completely understand the point you're making, Stephen. It's legitimate, and listeners, people in Belfast will be thinking, well, how much is this going to cost? The difference is that there's no begging bowl.
Are they deliberately being kept blind?
Well, there's no begging bowl in Belfast City Council going off to London. You know, we can't go to the Treasury or whoever. So we're going to have to make the sums add up, and that's 60 councillors that the people of Belfast elect every 4 years.
Will the SDLP, for these proposals, which the public are being kept blind about how much it would cost, would the SDLP support rates going up to pay for it?
No, we wouldn't. And
so what services will be cut to pay for it?
Steve, it's not as simple as that, you know, and I've been asked that before. You know, 2 years ago, I discovered that certain properties in Belfast weren't paying bin charges, and I was told, though, it wasn't really didn't mean much, and actually it's you know, an extra 400,000 has been found. So by looking around and looking for efficiencies and what can be done in the council better to save money, and I've done that and others have done that, the money will have to be found. So, but it may mean as well, it may mean that things that, you know, people wanted to do in a year or 2 years will take longer simply because the money isn't there. The last thing that I would ever stand over is I'm not putting rates up to pay for aspects of this. And by the way, the council had a duty to do this a long time ago. It should have been doing this, and it should find it from the existing rate that there is. So it's not a question of cutting services. It's a question of how we look things can be done better and money allocated in a better way. Same as your organisation's having to do, Stephen. Same as lots of organisations are having to do.
And Ron McDowell, contrary to what I've just said, the flip side of this is, how can you put a cost on providing rights to people which they're entitled to? How can you put a ceiling on that?
I don't think there's a right. To this goes beyond rights. The rights of people to choose whether they want an Irish heritage and identity thrusted upon them or not should be for themselves to decide in their own areas. What we have Belfast City Council here doing is an imposition of Irish language on everybody, whether it's their cultural identity or not. The Irish language is a heritage item. It should be cherished. It should be kept. It should be preserved. It shouldn't be used the way it's being used now. You haven't mentioned money, because what it tends to happen in Belfast City Council is there's a blank check for the Irish language and the Irish heritage items in Belfast City Council. They will find the money by...
It's hardly a blank check now. What do you mean by that?
Still, the Irish language street signage, I think we have 300 in the backlog, which is a cost of something like £170,000 or something like that. They find the money for it, and it only comes from one place. And this is, I suppose, a good point where Carl and I actually agree on something. It only comes from one place. It only comes from the ratepayer. We have more pressing issues in the city than the imposition of this Irish language policy.
Okay, well, look, these are proposals and a draft policy. There are so many of you contacting us this morning wanting to speak about it. We'll do that next. Carl White, Councillor Ron McDowell. Councillor White, Councillor McDowell, thank you very much indeed. Jim in Ballymuir. Morning, Jim.
Morning, Stephen. Well, it's not a good morning when I'm listening to your show this morning. I think it's a damn disgrace. A damn disgrace that you should even be thinking about this.
Why?
Think of the money, Stephen. That is the main thing.
Well, you can't think of the money because they won't tell you how much it's going to cost.
Hold on, Stephen. You make me the controller of this programme, but let me speak, okay? I come on to speak, but I'm speaking, okay?
Okay.
This is costing a damn fortune, okay? Very, very, very few people speak Irish or can even understand it. I can speak Irish. I know about 3 or 4... phrases in Irish. I speak Ulster Scots every day of my life, but I don't understand it when it's written down. I know Irish, and the phrases that I know is Cema Fáilte, which is 100,000 welcomes. I know Shinnewill, which is goodbye. I know Chucky Arla, which is our time will come. And I know Curry Me Yogurt Coca-Cola.
Well, now, come on.
Okay.
Like, come on.
No, Stephen, this is serious.
Treat it seriously.
Stephen, let me say this. We have a chief constable who's running the length and breadth of the country to try and get money to keep our police officers on the street. We are moving services from hospital to hospital to hospital to try and save money, and we're talking about spending money. Oh, I don't know how much, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands to have all these corporate signs all designed and printed and made up and whatever. I think it's an absolute
disgrace. Well, it's not just signs. There will be translation services into Irish for anybody that needs it.
I come.
This draft proposal also says that the council will establish a transparent set of principles for promoting, protecting and enhancing the linguistic diversity of the city.
Yes, that's fine. That's okay, Stephen. That's okay. What is more important? We had a family, that's the only way I can explain, we had a family who was burnt out of their restaurant. That restaurant was in my family for the past 60 or 70 years, and they were burnt out. And that was Whitley's Pub at Ballyrobert.
Well, what's that got to do with this?
Well, if the police had more money, they could do something about it. We have people on the news this morning.
Well, the council are wanting you also to be educated, Jim. They're saying that they will promote the learning of Irish as a vibrant modern language.
Forgetting about all that, Stephen. We're talking about signs here, signs there, signs.
The council say they will take resolute action to promote and protect the Irish language across the council area, across its own public-facing services. Resolute action.
Stephen, if you're looking for a toilet, you'll not be looking for it in Irish. And what you do is you look for a picture of a woman, you look for a picture of a man. It's that simple.
Jim, thank you. Ryan in Belfast. Morning, Ryan.
Stephen,
The council will also promote, they say in this draft consultation, Irish language events in the city. They don't say how many. They don't say how much. They don't say how many Irish language events will be promoted compared to English language events. They don't say how many Irish language events will be promoted compared to Ulster Scots events. There's quite a lot of ambiguity in this. And the biggest ambiguity is the money, Ryan. How much?
Well, I'm from the Shankar area. I feel totally disgusted. What about the Polish, the Chinese people live in Belfast? No, why Irish? No, there's more Chinese, Polish people, even Middle Eastern European people who live in the Belfast City Council. He also works for Belfast City Council. So that's a wee bit of discrimination against them.
But Ryan, what have you really got to fear with a logo that's bilingual?
Well, honestly, what have I got to fear? Well, first of all, I don't know the Irish language.
The council is proposing to provide education to people like you to learn about it.
Well, I'm in my 40s, so why would I want to learn Irish language? I'd be better off learning Spanish or German, so when I go on holidays with the kids, I can speak our language. If I go down to Dublin, I know I can speak English too.
Look, think about this for one moment. Have you anything to fear?
Well, also, it's my British identity is being taken off me. I'm being forced that I'm Irish, but I'm not. I'm British.
But how is it being taken off you? Because there's a Welsh Language Act, there's a Scottish Language Act. How is it being taken off you, Ryan?
Well, obviously,
these logos will be on the Shankill, in the likes of the Leisure Centre, for example. The signage will be in both English and Irish.
Well, I would say for the first night when the signs get put up, it'd be all scripted. Like, you're going up to Londonderry, all the on the road signs, it's London, all scripted out, so it's Derry. So it happens to both sides of communities. No.
But is that the type of world you want to live in, Ryan, where
scrubbing
out our public-facing signs?
No.
Why?
No. See, to be honest, in the working life, nobody cares. Everybody takes a mickey from each other. No one takes it to heart. No, we all take no basically joke about it. You know, our religion suits people because we can understand. We can work with each other. It's just, we don't force it onto you. Anybody, that's what's good about it.
How do you think it is going to go down on the likes of the Shankill where you say you live? Will people not mind if staff are driving into the area with bilingual logos? All they're doing is doing a job. That's all they're doing.
Because obviously from the Shankill, you see the tourists coming up. That's what they're looking to see. They're going up to see the Peace Wall. Go down along the way, down the Shankill, see all the murals, but the Queen, the King. That's, we're bringing money in. for people showing our business, and then they're going up a fuss within their areas. So, well, that's what people are paying money for, so we should be showing that off.
Ran, thank you. Brian in Dublin. Morning, Brian.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
You're all muffled.
Oh, sorry. Apologies.
Oh, no, we couldn't hear that. We'll have to try to get that fixed. Brian and Bagger. Morning, Brian.
Morning, Stephen. Stephen, I think the council should concentrate wholeheartedly on improving the countryside, improving making roads safer for pedestrians, for cyclists, for drivers of buses, etc.
They should be cutting the grass around graves where people are grieving.
Absolutely.
At Roselawn.
Councils have lost their way, like a lot of people in this country. Our MLAs, they've lost their way. They don't know what they're doing. The left hand doesn't know what the right hand's doing. They talk about building Casement Park. We can't even improve our roads on our health service. They're living in cuckoo land. People talk well. Let's see their face, Stephen. Let's see their face. Talk well. That's the country we're living in. Racism, vandalism. You're just a number. You're just a number. People don't care about you.
So why not then support the council, which is trying to bring together communities by making things bilingual?
It's not important. The cost of
it. It's not important to you, but it is to others.
It's not important. It's making this country better, improving our countryside. For example, down here in Bangor, for 30 odd years, the left hand doesn't know what the right hand's doing with the support. Talking.
Well, Belfast City Council, Brian, published its first language policy in 2006, right? 18 years ago, and that outlined a commitment to using Irish and Ulster Scots in correspondence with members of the public. Then in 2018, the council adopted a language strategy. In keeping, they say, with the council's long-term vision for the city, as set out in the Belfast agenda, this is from the council background to the public consultation, they say the strategy aspires to create a place where linguistic diversity is celebrated and respected, and where those who live, work and visit Belfast can expect to access Belfast, what it has to offer, using forms of language with which they are familiar and comfortable. What's wrong with that?
I don't think it's so very important, because if you want to learn another language, you go and take time out to study yourself, like French, Spanish, Italian. I don't think it's of importance. You know.
Well, look, on Census Day in 2021, English was the main language with 95.4% of the population aged 3 and over. The most prevalent main languages other than English were Polish, 20,100 people, Lithuanian, 9,000, Irish, 6,000.
Yes.
So why, if this is about making people feel welcome and the use of language, if the second biggest language is Polish, why are the council signs not in Polish?
No idea, but again, Stephen, so down to prioritising what is on the top of the list. Like, we talk a lot about the health service, the TV and the roads. Let's put priorities in perspective, Stephen, okay? Let's talk about our Prime Minister talks about building Casement Park. Well, all talking about Casement Park won't happen unless we get people working together to transform this beautiful country.
Brian, thank you. Brian in Dublin. Let's have a go at you again, Brian. Go ahead.
Hi, Stephen. How's it going?
Go ahead.
You just said there that you can't understand why there aren't Polish language signs. I mean, that's a little anti-intellectual, if I may say so myself.
Well, why?
Why? Because the point is that Irish is the historic language of Northern Ireland.
But if the council is saying, and they are saying this, If the council is saying that what they're trying to do is promote linguistic diversity, then if there are over threefold the number of people speaking Polish as there are Irish, why would they not also be talking, as well as Irish, about helping the Polish community who live in Northern Ireland? Why not?
Come on. Come on now. This is a very false argument.
Why?
That's a very false argument.
Why?
Because what does Belfast mean? Where does it come from? What does the word mean?
We're not coming down to definitions of words. We're talking about real life, real people.
That's the whole reason. You're trying to promote the historic cultural heritage of Northern Ireland and of the people like Ron McDowell, whose name is Gaelic-Irish, and your own Mr. Nolan, who's Gaelic-Irish, with your own prejudice, obviously, against the topic.
I don't have any prejudice against the topic. I'm reading.
Why do you always allow the likes of Ron McDowell or other unionist politicians...
He's an elected representative.
Allow them to come out with false information and not even offer a counter-argument when they say something is alien to them or foreign to them. They have a problem with Irish language signages on walls, but they've no problem with Irish language signages in Orange Lodges. One of the founder members of the Lodges...
Councillor McDowell said that.
Yeah, but he's saying it's foreign at the same time. There's a complete contradiction there. He's saying it's not British.
Saying I have prejudice, okay, which I obviously reject. Listen, every question I'm asking today, I'm anchoring every question I'm asking today on what Belfast City Council are saying or their objectives. I'm taking it from their written objectives, which also state that they want to, quote, increase the profile of different languages along with awareness and understanding of associated cultures, heritage and traditions. If we have 20,100 people speaking Polish here and relatively speaking only 6,000 speaking speaking Irish, how come Polish isn't getting a mention? That is a fair question, Brian. So intellectualise that.
I think you're muddying the waters, as they say. You're putting a bit of a smoke screen. I mean, where do you start and end with that type of argument? You could have so many different languages on the signs. I mean, the reality is Belfast comes from the word Belfersta, which means mouth of the river Fersta. So, I mean, the point is this, is to give it a certain sense of place. There's nothing in it. When somebody like a unionist politician, whether it be from the DUP or on McDowell there from the DUV, when they say it's an alien thing to their culture, why don't you even prophesize or just even suggest? Well, there's a counter argument.
I did go back and listen.
How did you say there was a counter-argument?
Well, I can't remember the exact words. Go back and listen to BBC Sounds. I'm telling you, I did.
You didn't say. Many people in the unionist community embrace it as their language. There's nothing British. It's not exclusively an Irish thing in that sense.
Here's another.
49% of the combined landmass of Britain and Ireland spoke Irish a few hundred years ago.
Here's another statement.
Most unionists have Gaelic-Irish surnames, so that means it's the language of their own ancestors, like Ron McDowell, or Mr. Lowry, or yourself, or Ian Paisley. These are all Gaelic surnames, or Jim Alistair, another Gaelic surname, so that means their own ancestors spoke Irish.
All I'm asking this morning, Brian, among many different questions, here's another section of the Belfast City Council website. Irish language is part of the shared cultural wealth and heritage of everyone who lives in Belfast and is the first language of a growing community of our citizens in the city.
Sure.
When Belfast City Council are saying it is the first language of a growing community of our citizens in the city, it is the fourth language according to the census. So what about the other two below English? What about Polish? What about Lithuanian? Do those people not exist?
Okay, well, the point is this as well.
How must they be feeling today as Northern Irish citizens?
One of the reasons you do it as well is that it's a minority threatened language, and the only places in the world that's going to protect it is either Northern Ireland or the Republic of Ireland. So if you're serious about knowing the value of things and not just knowing the price of things, and having a broader intellectual view of the world and a broader cultural view of the world, the only way you're actually going to properly value Polish and properly value Lithuanian is also properly value your own cultural heritage. So by putting up Irish language signage, you are in effect, in a very abstract way, albeit valuing other cultures as well. If you can't appreciate other cultures and your own identity, unless you can, if you don't do that, you can't appreciate other cultures and identity. And you can have the likes of Ron McDowell, and you can facilitate that false information the likes of him come out with, or the likes of other unionist politicians when they say it's alien. And the BBC is always happy to facilitate that false information and leave it relatively unchallenged.
Listen, Brian, look, you sound like a smart guy, right? The pejorative use of the BBC is always happy to facilitate. What the BBC is doing is allowing elected representatives who have a mandate to speak. There was a representative from the SDLP on this morning, and there was a representative from the TUV on this morning.
You often will contradict individuals when they come out.
I will challenge them. But you have phoned the programme, and you've been given a lengthy period of time to speak.
Yeah.
So drop this agenda nonsense, because it's nonsense.
Okay, well, regardless, it's a subconscious thing, I would argue, Mr. Nolan. I would argue it's a subconscious thing.
It might be in your subconscious, it's not mine.
Well, why when a unionist politician says it's alien, do you not shut them down immediately? Or just say somebody like Linda Irvine would disagree considerably with what you're saying there.
Linda Irvine was on this programme a matter of weeks ago.
I'm not saying that, but that's when when Ron McDowell says that it's not part of my British identity, that's false. It's just false. It's not a debate that if you've been discussing Irish language for God knows how many years in this program. But that what he said there is just factually incorrect.
Brian, thank you for your call today.
Thank you,
Brian. We'll hear from you again. Robert Nathalie. Good morning, Robert.
Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning.
I am a wee bit concerned the way this is going now, because over this past few years, Belfast City Council has decided that 15% of people living in an area can have a street name changed. When did 15% ever become a majority vote?
Sorry, say again, Robert. Sorry.
When did 15% of the people become the majority to allow a street name to be changed? Democracy has gone out the window.
Well, first of all, it's about protecting a minority language. We don't always, Robert, say that the only services, the only things that we protect are those who have the majority. We don't do that, do we? We protect many different minorities in Northern Ireland, which is why I was raising the question about the people who speak Polish. They're a minority.
No, I agree. I entirely agree. But it is totally undemocratic to allow 15% to dictate what will or will not happen with a street name. Surely that is common sense.
Well, you're saying it's undemocratic, and yet that was the democratically approved formula that was passed through council.
Yes.
So those councillors are only there because people vote for them. So they've got a mandate to create that equation.
They have. And what has happened is the tail is now wagging the dog. Collectively, if all the votes were taken across the country, they certainly wouldn't be changed in the name.
But does it change your life, Robert? Does it change the fabric of the street you live in, or the town or city you live in, if logos are bilingual?
It doesn't change my life at all. But all I'm saying is that we are going down a very dangerous road when we allow 15% to decide, where does this stop? Yes, it's street names now. What is the end product of that?
Well, have a listen to Thomas in Belfast here, who's talking, Robert, about the growth in Irish language. Morning, Thomas.
Stephen, I don't want to have a go at you today because you're getting enough of that. But earlier on, you said 6,000 according to the last census. Isn't that right?
That's the figure.
Yeah. Now, the 2021 census was 71,900. Now, unless 60,000 people up and left. I think you should have just broadly spread that. I mean,
well,
you,
look,
you,
I'm reading. What I'm looking at in front of me here, and Thomas, yeah, if I've got it wrong.
No, you haven't.
Thank you for pointing it out. So, but let me just
You've
read this. It is the 2021 census I'm reading from,
right?
Which says that English was the main language for 95.4% of the population who are age three and over. The most prevalent languages other than English were Polish, 20,100 people, Lithuanian, 9,000 people, Irish, 6,000 people, Romanian, 5,600 people, Portuguese, 5,000 people. So are you saying I've got it wrong?
Yep. Well, I'm reading it. In 2021, 71,900 people, 4% of the population, could speak Irish, and 228,600, 12.4%, had some knowledge of the Irish language.
Well, no. You see, what you're saying is could speak Irish, and that this census statistic I was reading was the main language.
Yes. Well, the 71,900 could speak Irish in 2021.
But that's not what I've cited. We've cited the statistic from the census about the main language other than English. The main language.
But I know that, but you're making it out, Stephen, that it is a dead language that no one
speaks. No, I'm not.
Well, why did you not say 71,900? What I'm reading now.
Well, you're saying it. But that's people that could say it. That's people that could say it. How many of those people is it their main language?
Well, it says 71,900 is their main language.
No, it doesn't. It says it's 6,000.
Point number two. Ron McDowell said, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I don't want to get this wrong. Ron McDowell said...
By the way, we're right. Yep.
So I'm reading this is wrong then?
We are right.
I send this in to you.
This is from the statistical body, NISRA. Anyway.
Ron McDowell said earlier in your interview that as soon as these things go up, inevitably there will be a cost in them being vandalised and having to be repaired. Now, Ron is an elected representative for everyone, not just one section of the community. So how do you think people are being burnt out and bricks put through their windows, minority. So if Ron's telling us, and he did on the radio live, that if a minority sign goes up, it will inevitably be tore down. So can I not go up the Shankill to the Shankill dump with a GAA top on? Will I be beat up? What is Ron saying?
Well, he's not talking about people being beaten up, is he?
Well, if an Irish sign goes up, inevitably. I think the word he used was inevitably. They will be tore down and vandalised. So if I were a GAA top to go to the Shankill Road, to go to the dump, to go to the leisure centre, to go to the cafe, am I going to be vandalised? Am I going to be beat up? Am I not welcome? You may as well just board it down. Ron has said the signs are not welcome and the people will inevitably take them down or vandalise them. So does that broadly scope to anything to do with Irish?
Thomas, thank you. So Belfast City Council want a public consultation. I think they're hearing some of it today on the radio. This consultation is now launched. We'll provide a link on my Twitter feed at Stephen Nolan to where the full consultation is laid out for you, and you can decide whether to take part or not. The news at 10 o'clock is coming up right now. Good morning, everyone. The DUP, the Ulster Unionist Party, the SDLP are all out against the Justice Minister, Naomi Long, over the last 24 hours, and her permanent secretary, Hugh Wittes, after Mr. Wittes copied a rebuke for John Boucher to the Prime Minister and many others. John Boucher was told off for going straight to the Prime Minister for asking for more funding, and the DUP, UUP, SDLP are supporting the Chief Constable for doing that. Hugh Wittes has also warned John Boucher that it is his duty to intervene on the Chief Constable if the Chief Constable does not work within his budget, and we'll pursue that in just a moment or two. Now, there was reporting yesterday in different areas of the media that Naomi Long has backed her permanent secretary for sending the letter, the guy called Hugh Wittes. Has she actually backed him totally? If you look closely at the statement, she says sending it to John Boucher was entirely appropriate. But Hugh Wittes sent it to many other people, the Prime Minister, the Justice Committee, the First and Deputy First Minister, the Policing Board. So I want to read to you Naomi Long's line in her statement, which some people are interpreting as a comprehensive endorsement of what Hugh Willis did. Here's the line. The Department of Justice Permanent Secretary and Accounting Officer Hugh Willis recently wrote to the Chief Constable in relation to his role as accounting officer for the PSNI, such correspondence is entirely appropriate, and it is regrettable that private correspondence has since been leaked. Wrote to the Chief Constable, she said. Didn't mention the fact that Mr. Willis wrote to many other people. So in case that we were interpreting that, because you can interpret it many different ways, such correspondence, is she talking about the totality of the correspondence? So we went back to the Department of Justice, essentially to ask them, was this Naomi Long totally backing Hugh Willis sending the letter to many others, other than the Chief Constable? And guess what? The Department of Justice are silent on that matter. Naomi Long is silent on that matter. So the public question to the Department of Justice this morning, we've already asked it behind the scenes, does Naomi Long think it is appropriate for her Permanent Secretary, Hugh Willis, to have copied that letter to all those different bodies or not? And why the silence around it? Now, the DUP MLA member of the Policing Board, Trevor Clark, gave his reaction on Evening Extra yesterday to this story.
Well, look, I mean, it's clear that the Chief Constable has been speaking to anyone who's willing to listen to him in terms of the funding. I support the Chief Constable's actions. I think this is more about the ego of some people who are concerned maybe if he can get the settlement that others couldn't. So okay. I hope this conversation with the Prime Minister is fruitful and that he gets the additional funding he requires to take the pressure off some of our police officers.
And on Good Morning also this morning, the SDLP MP Claire Hannah was asked if the Chief Constable did anything wrong with going to the Prime Minister.
Everybody knew John Boucher before he took this role. He is somebody who speaks his mind. It's somebody who understands this region and has a passion for delivering for it. I'm not going to be an expert in the niceties of whose job it is to write letters. But what I'm concerned about is getting public services sorted here. And I don't think trying to humiliate a senior figure like that, who is on balance a very positive person for this region, is a helpful way to do that.
Well, Mick Fieldy, the editor of Slugger O'Toole, the political website, is with us this morning. Morning to you, Mick.
Morning, Stephen.
Are you surprised at how many political parties are rallying around John Boucher? And where does that leave Naomi Long and her permanent secretary?
Well, given that the whole episode sounds like a badly written scene from Yes Minister, I'm not surprised, because I don't understand the motivation of the permanent secretary. I don't know what moved him to do it. And as you say this morning, not simply to send it to the Chief Constable, but to send it to the Prime Minister and Uncle Tom Cobley and all. It's embarrassing, frankly. And this is the sort of thing that maybe happens on a regular basis within the civil service, but it's a bit like seeing how sausages are made. It's embarrassing when it comes out into the public domain. Not all the political parties have, taken to the public domain and criticised Mr. Willis, but it's actually quite ludicrous that he should expect the Chief Constable, when he has the ear of the Prime Minister, not to lobby for what is obviously needed, extra resources, particularly in light of the recent unrest, as recently as yesterday, with a record low numbers within the PSNI, and bearing in mind it's only a week or two since a call was put out for extra bodies should they be needed to police Scotland. I'm not surprised. I mean, it's embarrassing that two of the parties that have criticised the Department of Justice are members of the executive. You would have thought to some degree there ought to have been some kind of internal discipline there. But I mean, in a sense, what Claire Hannah was saying at the end there, what's true of this particular chief constable is that he's no you know, he's no melting violet, is what
well,
I mean to say.
I can put some additional information around that into the public domain, which I don't think is in the public domain. So, senior source, a credible senior source has told me that after they gave John Boucher the job, after they indicated that he had the job, he refused to take the job until he got some of the terms and conditions changed about his about what he would be allowed to do and his in the job. So it's my understanding that Stormont offered Boucher the terms for the job and Boucher said no, and we're not talking about money here. We're talking about how he does his job in Northern Ireland. And he said no, and Stormont and Stormont conceded.
Yeah, well, that doesn't I mean, it's unusual. It's irregular. It probably tells enough of a story about the fate of the previous incumbents of the of that office. The last two, I think, went out under like wounded characters, if you like, within the kind of the local storm. He knows, like Hugh Ord before him, that it is to some degree a political job, and that if you are boxed in by conditions that say that you cannot make public statements, that you cannot lobby, that you cannot speak up for the force and its needs, then you're just waiting for the next crisis to come along until basically, there's a public controversy. You're not allowed to respond in any meaningful way, and you end up leaving with your tail between your legs. And Boucher knows this place well enough to know that those conditions that he refused would have contributed to that kind of scenario. So that's an interesting and a useful addition to the kind of wider picture.
If we then look at what has unfolded over the last 24 hours, and I'm zoning in on the language that Naomi Long has used in her statement for a reason, it is because we went back to the Department of Justice to clarify, Mick, because this speaks to the Permanent Secretary, Hugh Wittes, who essentially sent this. He sent this warning to John Boucher, as you know. And we asked the Department of Justice, we asked Naomi Long, did the minister sign off? Did she sign off the text of the letter from Hugh Wittes to the chief constable before it was sent? The Justice Department, the Department of Justice have failed to answer that question. We asked, did the minister approve the letter being sent to all of the other different people? The Department of Justice have avoided answering that question as well. And if you look at that clear text, Naomi Long says that Hugh Wittes wrote to the chief constable in relation to his role, such correspondence is entirely appropriate. And they've ducked whether the minister is backing Wittes in having copied it to all of the others. They've ducked answering that. So are they backing him?
Well, look, I'm not surprised, Stephen. Until quite recently, it was a tradition within the civil service, both the Northern Ireland civil service and what we used to call the Imperial Civil Service, the people who run the Northern Ireland office, who are effectively part of the UK civil service. The names of permanent secretaries were never in the public domain. They're not supposed to be in the public domain. They're supposed to be functionaries of the political officer who's appointed as minister for that department. So all of this is deeply embarrassing for them as a department. It's a degree of publicity and enforced openness, if you like, that they will be very, very uncomfortable with. And that relationship between the permanent secretary and the minister has traditionally been a very discreet one. The reference to Yes Minister wasn't just a throwaway thing. We saw in that whole comedy series just exactly what the interplay is and how much role ambiguity plays in all of that.
But in fairness to Hugh Willis, who is a civil servant, why is the Department of Justice not saying, yes, the minister approved that letter being copied to all of the other people? So it's being left up in the air now whether Hugh Willis did it as a solo run without the minister's approval, or did his minister agree to that being signed, that being sent to all of the other different people? Which brings me on to this next point, Mick.
Yeah.
Naomi Long has also said in her statement yesterday that it is regrettable that a private letter had been leaked.
Mm.
Now, Hugh Willis is a senior person in the civil service. Naomi Long is a seasoned, experienced politician. Naomi is saying it's regrettable that private letter to John Boucher has been leaked. Hugh Willis sent it, copied it, to different bodies, which totaled over 30 different people.
Mm.
What was their assessment in sending it to over 30 different people, bodies representing, comprising of 30 different people, that it might have been leaked?
Well, look, you can rest assured that in most of those cases, that it would have stood absolutely no chance of being leaked. The only place it would have possibly come from is the person who was clearly being put under collective pressure through the use of that widely distributed internal letter, and that has to be the chief constable himself, because he felt himself under attack.
Well, I'm telling you now, I had that letter. We broadcast it at 9 a.m. yesterday morning, and there is categorically no inference from this program that John Boucher gave us that letter.
Right.
No inference.
Well, right. Okay. Well. I'll be informed by that. But the point is, and I go back to my original point, is that the chief constable in the first place did not seek out an opportunity, or did not lobby remotely the prime minister. It's simply what happened in conversation when the prime minister reached out to the chief constable. In the specific circumstances.
Mick, we are going to come back to this story next week. Unfortunately, because of timing issues, we've got to leave it there, but we are coming back to this next week. All this experience I'm talking about, I'm 51 this week. I don't know if that's experience or not. At my age, I think it's all downhill from here. I've been speaking about this to the former Conservative MP, Edwina Curry, to talk about what life is like once you reach over 50.
Happy birthday, handsome. How does it feel?
Terrible. But seriously, what are you? Are you in your 70s or 80s now? Or what's the score with you?
I'm in the sort of later bit of the 70s. I'm still going. I'm still going. But I didn't have any choice, because I had to change career almost midstream when I was 50, because I lost my seat in 1997. So I had to swim out into the open ocean with only a couple of feathers to help me. And, you know, you succeed. You have to choose to do things differently, that's all, or look for different things to do.
So it's about embracing old age, is it? And recognising that you've only got a few cars left before you're dead.
You've got about 20-odd years before you have to start thinking like that, lad. You are in the prime of life.
Oh, nonsense. Don't start this malarkey. You're in your prime of your life when you're 19 or 20, aren't you?
Yep.
And you've got all that vitality. But the time you get to 50, it just is nearly all over.
What you have to do is look in the mirror and say to yourself, I'm gorgeous. I've got at least another 20 years of active life. I'm going to make the most of this. Wait for it, world. I'm a-coming.
But is it not depressing when you get to your age?
Sometimes, yes. Sometimes
not. Straight answer. Does it not? Like, once you get into your 70s, and that's not that, it's only 20 years away for me, is it not depressing?
Well, it depends what you mean by depressing. I mean, I've got an entertaining meeting coming up this afternoon with my solicitor, and we're going to go through my will. I haven't updated it for got 13 years. It's time I need to update it because there are new members of the family now. And I'm going to thoroughly enjoy myself deciding, you know, if I live long enough, there won't be any money left at all. And that's part of my great plan. But if I pop off tomorrow, then, there will be new beneficiaries. It's rather nice, you know. But you don't have to think about that. For a good 20-odd years, you should start thinking about the things that you haven't got time to do in your current life. And start putting them center. Make sure that you're enjoying yourself, that you're as healthy as you can be, and you've got as many friends as possible. That's all you really need in middle age.
I just find as time goes on that the amount of people who you can trust, you trust the really good friends, but as time goes on, you realise that you've got snakes all around you, but the really good friends, you treasure them more.
That's absolutely right. I mean, this is true at any stage in your life. It's true when you're a teenager. It's true when you're at college. It's true when you first start work. It's just that when you're quite young, you don't have the experience to recognize that.
Yeah.
And you're likely to treat somebody who's mean to you just exactly the same as somebody who's really kind and very loving. Apart from anything else, when you're young, you probably ignore your parents and your grandparents. When you get older, and I know this is true of you, you appreciate your parents and those who have, you know, given so much to bring you up. You appreciate them far more. And this is particularly true for people who have families of their own. Suddenly, I heard my daughter say to me, "Oh, Mum, you were right." And I think, oh, bless. Yes, of course, I was right. I just wish you'd realised that at the time.
It's amazing what experience actually brings, isn't it? And look, some of our younger listeners listening to this, they won't understand. They just won't. And I didn't understand. But it's amazing what 20 or 30 years experience brings to you by the time you get to 50 or in your age later, about how you look upon life, about how you look upon people. You're so naive in your teens and your 20s, and you don't realise it.
You're getting very, very serious. I would counsel you, and I am often right, as you know, Stephen. I would counsel you to think about ways of enjoying life.
Yeah.
And,
well, I've started.
You know, what,
I have done.
Yeah, and that's right. Go on. What are you doing differently that you didn't do, say, 5 or 10 years ago?
Well, it used to be. Here's an example. This is, again, a true story. BBC brought me up to the sixth floor about 10, 15 years ago. That's where all the managers sit, in the sixth floor. And they had a really kind of stern talking to me that I wouldn't take my holidays and I wouldn't leave work. And I was working 7 days a week and they were raging. They were absolutely raging that I wouldn't take my holidays. You see, now I'm back and forward to America as often as I can get. I treasure my free time. I'm slightly more confident in where I am in work and what I do. And I'm also slightly more confident, Edwina, that if this ever ended, well, that's okay. I've done it. And there are other things where there's all that work. The mortgage is paid off. I'm lucky enough for that. So there's a sense of freedom now. There's a sense of I can choose what to do now. And that's exhilarating, to be honest.
That's a wonderful transition. Do you travel business class?
I do. What are you
talking about?
I'm
man.
Too fat for the other way. I do. But it's also about people, isn't it? It's about being kind to people who are kind to you. It's also about, I guess, life experience, walking away from people that aren't kind to you, not getting involved in as many arguments. I find myself doing that as I get older as well.
I think there's an important element that comes in, particularly as we get a little bit older. It's called forgiveness. That, yeah, you had a row with this person or that person some years ago, and every instinct says, I don't want to see them again. I don't want to talk to them again. And then maybe you hear that, you know, they've not been well or they've had problems. Forgiveness comes in. Well, not a big, noisy forgiveness, but just a kind of, yeah, you know, you fancy having lunch, we go out for a meal, and then you can actually repair problems that have happened. And it's good for you. Really good for you.
So I've been terrible at that all my life, terrible. So one of the flaws I've got is as soon as someone does the dirt on me, right, my shutters come down and that's it. Like I have no sense. I hope I'm really good and kind to people up to the stage that they do the dirt. But I'm terrible at that, Edwina. Maybe that should change too. The shutters come down, my shop is shut, and they're not. I wouldn't even say hello to these people.
Well, if you carry that sort of pain with you, it's you that you're hurting in the end. I mean, they may not even notice some of these people. I suppose they will. But, you know, forgiveness is a nice thing to do if you have... I'm assuming you're going to have a party to celebrate your birthday.
Absolutely not. Can't stand them. Absolutely not.
If you give a party, you give the kind of party you want to go to. And that's when you invite all sorts of people, you know, people who helped you, people who look after you, people that you like, people that you've had on the programme or whatever. And, you have the kind of party you want
all
to have.
All these people tramping through your house, spilling things, and you've got to buy them crisps and cocktail sausages and all that. I cannot think of anything worse.
Well, you do it in somebody else's place, or you hire an entire pub and do it. For goodness sake, you've got plenty of choice in Belfast.
The other thing then, and I remember it was, I distinctly remember Eamon Holmes telling me this on his 50th birthday. He had a big birthday at 50. And I remember, excuse me, him telling me that as soon as you hit 50, nearly like an alarm goes off, in that year afterwards, your body starts telling you that you're not 40 anymore. And he says, I'm telling you, that's what happens. Do you agree with him?
Oh, it doesn't happen in one particular year, but I suspect what happens is that you start to think about it a little bit more, that this or that has been niggling you for a while, but you've put it off or you've ignored it. And you get to a certain point in your life, which could well be 50 or 51, where you actually start to take some notice and you think, maybe I ought to get that checked out. You know, there are very, very good campaigns about getting yourself checked out for prostate cancer, getting yourself, whenever you get one of these, the tests that comes, don't just put it in a drawer or ignore it. You know, make use of it, not least because you are healthy enough in your 50s to recover from whatever kind of treatment you might need. Whereas if you leave it until you're 60, it could be that it starts to take you over. So, yeah, I would always say, you know, you think a bit more about your health, that's fine. But does that mean you ain't going to go on a bender or eat all the wrong things? Stephen, it would be impossible to imagine you without those problems.
I got,
goodness me.
The favourite present I was bought for my birthday this year was a cup, and the cup's got a big lid on it. The big lid is on top of the cup. The big lid holds the crisps, and there's a straw through the big lid, and that holds the cola. So in the one in the one cup, it's a crisp holder and a drink holder. Oh, I love it. I absolutely love it. Finally, are you at the stage now where you've got a bucket list and you're ticking it off? Or are you relaxed?
Yeah, to some extent. I mean, for many, many years, starting over 30 years ago, I used to work on the cruise ships, talking.
Did you?
And that meant, yeah, and I've done, dozens and done probably the best part of 100 cruises, many of them with
You like your money, don't you?
Yeah. And so we went all over the world, been to the South Pacific, been everywhere that I would want to go that's got a shore. So what I do now is I go on holiday to places where the cruise ships can't go. And in a fortnight or so, I fly out to Nashville, Tennessee.
Oh.
And we're going down the Mississippi and we're going to end up in New Orleans.
Class. Class.
Yeah.
Listen, I always enjoy talking to you. Thank you, Edwina.
My pleasure. Happy birthday. Love you. Look after yourself.
Thank you very much. Walter Reisman says, Stephen, you're 51. I'm 86, he says, and I'm about to abseil down the side of the city hospital for Friends of Cancer. Fair play, Walter. See you tonight in 5 Live and see you back here Monday morning. Thank you for the week.
Show in the country. Listen again on BBC Sounds. Tweet @StephenNolan.